Have you guys made your New Year's resolutions yet?
No.
One honest soul. Maybe I should ask, have you broken your New Year's resolutions already? That's probably what is more legitimate to ask. How about some goals? Do you have any goals that you want to accomplish this year? Maybe, have you just paused to reflect on your lives and what the new year might bring? I think that's what I'm trying to do with you this morning, is just kind of get you to reflect on a couple of things. Your personal goals, your personal resolutions, those are for you. Those are for you to do, and I'm guessing most of them are good ones. You know, you want to do some good things, you want to accomplish some good things, whatever it might be. Personal, familial, in your work, whatever. Just a lot of things I know that the new year brings that time for us to kind of stop and think and kind of renew ourselves again. A couple of weeks ago on a Sunday night, we looked at Psalm 90 and verse 12, where Moses is praying to God and he's saying, "Lord, teach us to number our days." In other words, consider with each passing year that we know this life is going to end, and what are we going to do with our lives this year? How are we going to serve you? What important, significant things are we going to try to do this year? And I would just say today, without making any kind of rash resolutions or goals that are unattainable, let's just consider today a few things about our lives that will indeed help guide our thoughts and our actions throughout the year. And maybe these are some things that are sort of the underlying things you need to accomplish whatever goals you've set out for yourself this year. And so the first thing I want you to think about is simply to reflect on the seasons of life. And that's the reason why I want to look at Ecclesiastes chapter 3, verses 1 through 13. It's a passage we did not look at this morning when we're looking at Ecclesiastes, but it is a very interesting one. Because it is one in which, in verses 1 through 8 in particular, the writer simply says, you know what? Everybody's going to experience a lot of different things in their lives. There are some things that we humans can know about life by observation and experience. And what the writer does here is he gives us some of those. And he says, essentially, you know what? Experiences over a whole lifetime include a pretty wide variety, sometimes of opposing things. Time to plant, time to pluck up what is planted, a time to kill, a time to heal, time to break down, a time to build up, a time to weep, a time to laugh. And he goes through this whole litany of things that every one of us are going to experience in our lifetimes. You know, and it kind of presents a sort of cyclical view of our lives, that we all will experience these things, maybe at different times, but we're all going to have them. They're going to kind of come and go, and maybe some of them will come and go several times in our lives that we have to experience certain things. And part of the problem that we have when we look at this kind of thing is it somewhat limits our own personal freedom. We don't have a choice sometimes as to when these things happen. Now, we have a choice as to how we're going to respond to them, but we don't necessarily have a choice that we're not ever going to get away from experiencing grief, for example. We're not going to get away from experiencing the time to weep. It's going to happen. We would prefer that it's always a time to laugh, but that's not just going to be that way. And there are so many other things in there that those polar opposites are things that, you know, we don't have the freedom to know that when they're going to happen. So our freedom is limited to some degree, but we do have the freedom to respond to them. And so as you think about your life, as you reflect on your life this year, just remember that. Maybe the plans that you've set out for yourself, there's going to be a few wrinkles and some detours. You can handle them, but just know that, you know, that's kind of the way that's life. That's what's going to happen to us. Now in verses 9 through 13, he tells us a couple of different things, because I think essentially he tells us there are things we cannot know about our lives. Man cannot know what God has done at the beginning, nor will do at the end. Verse 11. You see, there's still some mystery in life. There's still some things about what God is doing that he has not told us and is not going to tell us. He's not necessarily going to tell us what's going to happen to us tomorrow. We can't know the future. God can know the future, but we can't, and he doesn't tell us that. So there are some things about our lives we can know. There's some things about our lives we really cannot know. How do we deal with those things? How do we reflect on that? Well, the writer gives us a couple of keys. Number one, he says, first of all, there is some beauty about your life that you can strive to see. He says, I perceive that there is nothing better for them than to be joyful and to do good as long as they live. He says in verse 11, he's made everything beautiful in its time. Can you see the beauty in your life? Can you look for those things rather than have this sort of misanthropic view of life that, oh, everything's just awful and bad? The writer says, you know what? You're going to experience a lot of things, but somehow God has brought some beauty into that. He's built beauty into our lives. He's built beauty into the world he's made. Can you see that? Can you see that in your life this year? He also tells us that he has put eternity into the hearts of mankind. I don't know if that's just a reflection of our aspirations, of the things that we want. I think deep inside of us, it's kind of the aspiration that we really want to see our lives continue on, and that death is a very frustrating experience. It's not something we want. We want to continue on this life. For all the bad things in life, most of us want to feel like, you know, maybe there's something better that we can experience. And I think that's what the writer is kind of trying to say here. And despite our limitations to our sight and to our freedoms, God has given us things to enjoy, verse 13. So there are several things here that the writer says, you know, as you reflect on your life, think about some of these good things. Focus on those things. Our lives can be fulfilling. And I'm going to say something here that may sound a little strange, but I kind of want you to understand the context in which I'm trying to say it. And that is simply, don't necessarily strive for your life to be exceptional. You know, and I really want to say, you know, strive to do the best you can in everything. That's really what I want. But I think the world has a way of defining what exceptional is that God doesn't necessarily see as exceptional. So instead of striving to be exceptional, I think we should be saying to ourselves, let's just strive to be faithful. And I think if we strive to be faithful, exceptional kind of comes along with the program. That we will do the best that we can in everything that we do. And that whatever we can accomplish by the power of God and by the will of God. And in being faithful, I think our lives end up being very exceptional. I don't know that the world will always see that, because what the world considers ordinary is probably exceptional in the eyes of God. And I think for this year, I'm going to be reading a book about Christians being ordinary. So you may hear me talk about that from time to time, at least for the next couple of weeks as I read through the book. But I think we've got this American Idol mentality, or at least society seems to have this mentality that we always want to be the next great biggest thing. Okay? We don't have to be that. Most of us are not going to be that. You know, let's face it, I was not born to be a professional athlete. And I think I did okay with what I did, but I wasn't good enough to really be at the top of the heap. You know what? Maybe my life can still be great in the eyes of God if I'm faithful. And that's what we need to strive for. So as you reflect on the seasons of your own life and, you know, what years you have left in your life, think about that. Number two, I would suggest that you strive to discern the hand of God. And I want to start there in Psalm 147. Strive to discern the hand of God. The passage that was read this morning came, or at least the psalm that was read, came from verses 12 through 20. But as you look at Psalm 147, one of the things the psalmist does for us is he highlights God's sovereignty along with his redemptive activity. He notes the fact that God's got his hand over everything. And I would like for us this year to be thinking about how we see that. And you know, I think if we can learn to see the hand of God, I think gratitude's one of the things that kind of comes along in its wake. Once we see what God is doing. The first thing the psalmist says, as we look at verses 2 and 3, as well as verse 6, is that he gathers the outcasts of Israel, he heals the brokenhearted, and he binds up their wounds. And in verse 6, the Lord lifts up the humble, and he casts the wicked to the ground. And I know we don't always see that in every single day, in every single newscast that we learn, but we know that that's the God that we serve. He is a God who redeems people, who is concerned about the downtrodden and the outcast. His power extends over the span of the entire universe, verse 4. He determines the number of stars and gives to all of them their names. Now, I know that the astronomers have been able to determine that there are more stars than we can actually count. And yet God's given all of them a name? Well, that's maybe mysterious in the same way that God's has all the hairs of your head numbered. But God's sovereign over that, you see. God knows all those things. Can you see God's hand in that? Can you discern the hand of God in that idea? You see, and numerous verses in this psalm reflect his provisions for food and his control over nature. That's part of what we read this morning. Okay? And we need to be able to see those things. We need to be able to see those things, that God's the one that gives us those. And the psalmist is writing those things to his own people, to the people of Israel, whose neighbors felt like that there were all kinds of other gods who provided those things. The psalmist here says, no. It's God, the God who created the universe, the God who gave us Jesus Christ and the gospel. That's the God that provides all these things. And we need to be able to see that. We need to be able to see that he has revealed himself to his people. Verse 19. He declares his word to Jacob, his statutes and rules to Israel. God has revealed himself. He's revealed himself in the Old Testament. He has further revealed himself in the New Testament through Jesus Christ. Now I'd like you to turn to Psalm 8 and see if there's some other way that we might be able to discern the hand of God, maybe more directly related to who we are as human beings and how God feels about us. In Psalm 8, there are some rather interesting things that are said, not the least of which is Psalm 8 and verse 2, a passage that Jesus himself quotes. Out of the mouth of babes and infants you have established strength because of your foes. Jesus says that, does he not, on his way into Jerusalem when the crowds are extolling him and praising him? And the Pharisees tell him, you know, have your people shut up? And he says, no, because out of the mouth of babes, all right, God is extolled. Now, in this particular psalm, the psalmist also he questions the role of man in contrast to the majesty of God. Verse 3, when I look at your heavens, the work of your fingers, the moon and the stars which you have set in place, what is man that you're mindful of him? Or the son of man that you care for him? Do you ever stop and look up at the stars at night and just think about how big the universe is? And maybe how small you are in relationship to the universe. How small you are in relationship just to the earth and the numbers of people there are in it. Does that ever make you feel insignificant? Well, I think the psalmist is saying, I kind of feel insignificant at the same time. I mean, you know, he's wondering, well, who am I? What is man that you're really mindful of him? Well, the fact is, God is mindful of humanity. Can you see the hand of God in that? Can you see the role of God in caring for you? And I know we have to move over into the New Testament where we really see it, where we really see that God sent his only son to us, you know, to die for us, that we can really see that God is mindful of mankind. God is mindful of me. Say that to yourself, you know, as you go about this year. God's mindful of me. I don't think we say that with arrogance. We don't say that with self-righteousness. We just know that God does care about humanity and he's mindful of humanity. I also realize in this particular passage that later on when we get in the book of Hebrews, Hebrews chapter 2, verses 5 through 9, that the writer of Hebrews will apply this idea to Jesus himself. And I think the idea there is that Jesus is sort of the highest achievement of humanity. But in a very real sense, you see, that kind of gives some credence to the idea that God really cares about humanity. He sent his son to become a human being. Now just reflect on that for the year. See, by God's grace, mankind can be redeemed by the very person mankind was meant to, the very thing mankind was meant to be. And we see that in the life of Jesus Christ. One more passage in the Old Testament, Jeremiah 31, verses 7 through 14. The prophet really gives Israel and us the hope of redemption. He talks about the return of the exiles. Returning home, really, is what the exiles are longing for. And you'll remember in Jeremiah, that Jeremiah is written during a time when Israel was taken captive into Babylon. They were taken away from their homeland, the homeland that God had given them. Now, they deserved to be taken away. Make no mistake about that. That's one of the constant messages that we hear both in Jeremiah and in Ezekiel. They deserved to be taken away. But it didn't stop them from longing for home, any more than it stopped the prodigal son longing for his home, longing for his father. You see, what we learn from Jeremiah and other prophets is that really, in the midst of God's punishment, in the midst of God's judgment, he still marks out the way that we can go home. Philippians chapter 3 and verse 19, Paul reminds his audience that our citizenship is in heaven. And so there's a place for us. And I would say that discerning the way home to God can provide hope for any age. Home is a place where you're comfortable. Home is a place where you belong. Home is kind of the idea that God says to us, when you come back to him, it's like being home. And so we always hold out hope that we're going to get to go home. The third thing I would say to you is keep eternity in mind. Very consistent with, I think, what I'm saying here. In Ecclesiastes chapter 3 and verse 11, we read that God has placed eternity in our hearts. I think that means that he has simply, in the heart of humanity, we know we kind of want this life to go on. Death is not a good thing. Death is an enemy. We want life to continue. And if you keep eternity in mind, you will recognize there's a way that can happen. And for this, we will turn to the book of Ephesians and chapter 1 and following. Chapter 1, verses 1 through 14, actually verses 3 through 14. Just a couple of passages in there. Again, for your thoughts this year, think about these things. In verse 4, we're told that God had a plan from the very foundation of the world. God had this all marked out. God made the blueprint, to use an old term. God made the schematic. God made the drawing, okay, of how the plan was going to work. I'm not sure I can plumb the depths of all of how God planned that out, how God knew the future, how God knew this was going to happen, that was going to happen, but still give us free will. And I've said many times, I just live with the mystery of that. We live somewhere in the middle of the of what that is and trying to figure it out. But I believe it's there. I believe those are sort of the parameters. God had a plan, but he still gives us free will. The fact is, God had a plan. And by that plan, we can keep eternity in mind. It says in verse 10 that his plan was to bring about a union of heaven and earth through Christ. And the book of Ephesians, probably among so many other books in the New Testament, tells us about that connection, that somehow that, he keeps talking about something going on in the heavenly realms, but he says that, our lives are sort of cast somewhere between heaven and earth, but somehow heaven has come down and connected with us on earth for those of us who are in the church. And it's through that church that God has connected himself with us. In verse 14, we are told that because of that union of heaven and earth, we have an inheritance awaiting for us. An inheritance where neither moth nor rust can destroy, An inheritance where we will live forever. An inheritance that's not going to fade or perish. It's eternal. It is an eternal inheritance. And one of the things that the writer here has told us in chapter 1 and verse 10, he said basically the same thing in Galatians 4 and verse 4, that we, in this day and age, have reached the fullness of time. It is, on the one hand, the fulfillment of prophecy. It is, on the other hand, a recognition that the plan of God has reached its completion in Christ, and we are living in it. We're living in that time when God's plan was completed. We're not living in the time of Old Testament prophecy when we're still waiting for it. We're living in the time when it's been fulfilled. And we can see the hope that we have. It was, when Christ came, the closing of one epoch and the opening of another. It's the final one. There's not going to be another period of time after this one other than moving into the time of eternity. And when we pass out of this life, we move into that time of eternity. We are living in and have experienced this momentous occasion. Ecclesiastes does not and cannot account for this. It's only when you get to the gospel is that find its full completion. Only in this new age can we experience the hope of eternity that the writer in Ecclesiastes said was sort of put in our hearts. Now we have a better vision of it. Now we know for sure that there can be an eternity for us, and a better and a good one at that. And so in keeping eternity in mind, I would also like you to keep this vision in mind, and that is a vision of Jesus Christ on the throne of God. And that, I would say, we would turn to Revelation chapter 21, verses 1 through 6. In order to keep eternity in mind, I think you have to remember who's the one who's in control of it. And that is Jesus Christ at the right hand of God on the throne in control of history. And I know it doesn't always seem like it because there are a lot of perplexing things and awful things that have happened in this life. But it's only because of Jesus Christ can we even have hope beyond those things. In verse 5 of Revelation 21, this king on the throne says simply, "I am making all things new." What role do we play in that? Do our goals, do our aspirations, do our resolutions for this year have in mind some way of being a part of making all things new? You know, God uses the church to do that. And that means every one of us has a role to play in making all things new. I won't say you're going to have some grandiose scheme to do it, but in your little corner of existence, you can make things new for yourself and for a lot of other people just by being faithful to Jesus Christ. We are told in Revelation 21 that he will give to everyone from the spring of the water of life. Comes directly from his throne, comes directly from him. If we keep eternity in mind, we can drink from that well. In fact, I think we're drinking from it now. God's Spirit has come and given us new life. And so I would simply say for this year, for you, for all of us, think about the seasons of your life. See the hand of God that gives you life and hope. Look for ways you know that God is active and at work, and rejoice in those things. And always keep the hope of eternity alive within you. Never lose that hope. Our wish for one another and for other people, is it not, I think, said best by the Gospel of John in John chapter 20, verses 30 through 31. "Now Jesus did many other signs in the presence of the disciples, which are not written in this book. But these are written that you may believe that Jesus is the Christ, the Son of God, and that by believing you may have life in his name." See, the Gospel is all about life, isn't it? And as you reflect on your life this year, don't forget that life. because that's the one that really counts. May you keep the hope of life near and dear to your hearts in this coming year. Amen. And always.